That's right. The gurus of how to are here. Alvin and Lawrence Ubell, also known as Acrid Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, New York. And they visit us once a month to talk about home repair and related matters. It's always a pleasure to see you, gentlemen.
Hi, how you doing?
You brought a placemat for me this time.
Yes,
we brought
you a placemat.
Just and for the heck of it?
Well, actually, it relates to the word of the month.
Which we will get to in a moment.
Well, actually, later we're going to have the catering in also from Nikos's diner, so it matches the placemat.
When you come here, we get so much email, so many email requests, I forward them as many as I can to you, despite the fact that we always give out your email address.
Well, and the ones that you sent me, about 10% of the ones I get.
Really?
Yes. So for you people, I still haven't gotten around to it. Be patient.
But do you ever feel the need to answer some of those questions on the air?
Well, we have one that just came in yesterday, and I thought it would be appropriate because this is a common question of people who have terraces that are made out of wood, and they're always putting coatings on them, and they're doing all kinds of things to either make them look new forever. New forever is not the right thing to do. And this has to do with this email. And the question is from one of our listeners. Her name is Amy. Asked how she could stop the peeling of the coating her husband has been putting on the deck, and also how she could stop the growth of mildew. And it's very simple. Just scrub it with, or power wash it, clean it with bleach or with liquid detergent. No coating or sealant is necessary. The question is that we talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
But doesn't the weather destroy the wood?
Do they paint or coat the boardwalk at Coney Island or at the Rockaways or any
or Atlantic City?
Or yeah. Atlantic City. They don't paint those things. They leave them alone.
But don't they have to replace the planks sometimes?
Yeah, but the thing is that when you paint something or coat it, you're actually holding the moisture in, and the wood starts to rot underneath the coating. So wood does wear out. It is a natural product. Yes, one or two planks need to be replaced. But like if you've ever been to seaside communities, a lot of times the cedar shingles or shakes that they have on the sides of buildings get blown off, and all they do is they don't paint those either. They just replace them, and with a year or two, they blend right into everything else, and that's going to happen on your deck also.
That's also at Fire Island. They have the walkways.
Exactly.
Nobody paints that. But if you want something to look sort of clean-looking, the best you can do is chlorine bleach, brush it on, let it dry for a little while, and then you can put in some boiled linseed oil with about 50% kerosene, brush it on, and that's all you should do.
And if you want to stain it, you could put in an oil-based stain.
That's the best you can do.
But yeah. don't use a polyurethane stain because then it'll start peeling off again.
Every year when you come here in the early summer, we ask the same air conditioner questions. But this year has been a little different because we've had blackouts, brownouts. One half of the electricity in my building went off the other day and was off for a couple of hours. And I wonder if there are things that we can do and still stay cool.
Well, the idea is to make your own human air conditioning system work better. Mm-hmm. And the idea is to understand what's going on about you.
You're going to have to walk around naked all the time?
Well, it's not necessarily.
And what a sight to behold that would be.
Well, yes. Some would appreciate it.
As long as one person appreciates it. Easy street.
But the idea is that if your body is perspiring, and what happens is if you have a low relative humidity in your house, what happens is that moisture that comes to your surface actually cools off your body and you feel cooler at a low relative humidity. So the idea is the air conditioning units that people have, if they can set them at a low level, you know, in other words, not to be full blast when they are not in the house, to make sure that the air conditioning unit acts like a dehumidifier, you will feel much cooler when you walk into the house. As far as people who have all the air conditioning units, change the filters, clean the filters, clean your units. Cleanliness is the name of the game to save energy, reduce the energy load, also make the system work better so that you feel more comfortable. And also, drink lots of water. The more water you drink, the cooler you will become.
What about taking a lot of showers? Hot showers, cool showers?
It's not while you're taking the shower that you're going to be cool. You're going to be cool when you take the shower. But once you get out of the shower and the water is evaporating from your body, that moment you'll feel really cool, because when the take water and turn it into a gas, which is actually happening from evaporation, it needs heat energy, and it absorbs the heat energy from your body to do that.
So don't dry off. Just walk around wet until it dries up by itself.
That would be like you come out of the...
Well, it depends how many puddles you want to leave around the house.
Then we have to fix the floors.
Exactly. Now you're creating new problems.
With good sense.
But it's also, if you have a house, you can open up the windows on the lower floor on the north side and the windows on the upper side on the south side, and that'll suck the heat through the building through natural convective flow. Full house fans, like for instance, a day like today where it's beautiful here in New York, that the house sometimes holds the heat in. You put a whole house fan in, open the windows, and exhaust the heat out of the building. Also, if you're in a house that's very hot from a hot day and you want to get a lot of the residual heat out, turn that fan on and then turn your air conditioners on, and you will use less compressor energy and just allow the rooms to get cooled off.
So because in my own home, I have central air conditioning, but I also have ceiling fans. And that really helps the system work much better. And people should consider ceiling fans, because they use a lot less electricity than even the smallest window air conditioner.
Now, when you come by, you always bring a quiz. And who's going to read the question this time?
You want me to do it this time?
You got it.
In the language of architecture and design, what is the name given to the geometric design pattern found on the tile trim in many of the New York City subway stations, buildings, fabrics, jewelry, china, and a multitude of products, even the placemat there, which you'll see in many diners, a product that resemble a running molding trim of interlocking horizontal and vertical pattern.
Sometimes even on cups.
On cups.
Coffee cups that you see get that in some of the local stores.
And by the way, that's not New York City's fabrics, jewelry, and china. That was just New York City subway stations. The fabric, jewelry, and china.
Okay, so what is the name of the pattern?
Of the pattern of that geometric interlocking horizontal and vertical lines.
And the number to call, 212-433-9692. Call us if you know the answer, but also call us if you have a question for the gurus of how to.
And what do they get for winning this, getting this work?
What they will get is a copy, I believe, of your book by my father, Alvin Ubel. By the way, he's my father. Those people think he's my brother.
We
get so much stuff that we're brothers, and I go, okay.
We are not brothers.
And it's really amazing. Well, get me back. And George Merlis called Save Money, Save Energy. And the other funny thing is Matthew, my partner, found on a blog about brownstones, about our company and how nice we are to deal with and so on. And the funny thing is that all they mention is Matthew Barnett and my father, Alvin Ubel. And then all of a sudden, Matt and I are talking. He says, when was the last time Al actually even did an inspection? They think I'm him.
This is WNYC 93.9 AM 820. We're online at WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Should we take some calls?
Yes, go right ahead.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And we go now to Jane from Manhattan. Hi, Jane. You're on the Leonard Lopate Show.
Oh, hi. It's wonderful to speak with you. And I always love listening to Alan Larry Ubel.
Father and son. You're aware of that, right?
Not brothers. We don't have to push that too heavy.
All right. Listen, my question is, are those drain openers made from enzymes and bacteria safe for the pipes? I know liquid plumber and stuff is, Drano is very dangerous for the pipes.
They're not dangerous. They're caustic solutions that that break down anything that is biological.
The enzymes are caustic, or the Drano is caustic?
The Drano is.
The Drano is caustic.
Oh, I see.
But the Drano...
Here's the funny thing. Actually those kind of drain cleaners will actually have more effect on cast iron pipes than they will on PVC pipes.
Yes.
They tend to not deteriorate the PVC pipes as quickly as the cast iron or metal pipe. But go on.
But they don't do too much. They don't do that much damage as people think. What happens is when you have very, very, very old pipes that are very thin, all of a sudden a leak may pop through. Not necessarily because the drain solvent eats away the pipes, is that the sludge that's inside the pipe sometimes has blocked off the actual leakage after a while.
Oh,
and now all of a sudden you put through some of this caustic solution and it washes away or dissolves all of the grease and hair and everything else, and all of a sudden the leak shows itself to the surface.
I see. But are the are the products that are out now with the enzymes in it, are those harmful?
No, they're not harmful.
Let me ask you a question. Where are you putting – what
well,
is your
– It's. I live in an old building, and the bathtub, the pipes are about 60 years old.
Yes.
And the bathtubs are very slow.
Septic system or sewer system?
Just – well, I'm in Manhattan.
Okay, sewer system. It's probably not going to do as much damage as, let's say, Drano or a thing called clobber.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, if there is some deteriorating matter, it may do some damage. And like you said, the pipes are 60 years old. But I have to tell you right now that I've taken pipes apart in my house. So my house is close to,
Yeah, we're also getting calls on the air.
So the enzymes don't harm the pipes then? I mean,
No, they don't harm the pipes. They just eat up all of the of the sludge.
Right.
And I'm just,
those are the same sorts of things that you get with those fabric, the things that you do on the pre-washes.
That's exactly right. Oh.
They're enzymes that dissolve the stains. So the stains. In this case, these enzymes go after the cook that's in the sink?
Yeah, but the thing is that my experience is that the caustic solutions that are put into the pipes don't actually eat away the metal. They actually eat away the biological materials and open up the drain. But what happens is over the years, sometimes this biological material sludge actually becomes a blockage for a leak that you have in the pipe.
It becomes the patch in the pipe.
Yes, and then all of a sudden you're putting in this this material which washes away the blockage from the leak, and all of a sudden the leak opens up. But you had the leak from the very beginning anyway.
But also one thing I want to say in plumbing waste pipes overall is even from taking my house apart for different repairs and so on, that you find that pipes that are over 40 or 50 years old, waste pipes, have over an inch or so of crud lining the pipes. And so there really is an effective lifespan of these pipes. And many of these pipes, when people are doing renovations of brownstones, replace a lot of these pipes, and they find their plumbing works a lot better. So none of this stuff is forever, and it does need service and maintenance.
Rob from Coscob, Connecticut.
Coscob, how are you doing, Coscob?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. Fine. What's your wonderful question?
I got two quick questions. One is I had a chimney repointed, and we had to take down the old television antenna.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming that was acting as a lightning rod. So my question is, do I need to put a lightning rod back up on the house?
First of all, it wasn't.
It wasn't?
No, because unless the wire coming off of that lightning rod is at least number three wire.
Number two or number three wire. Otherwise, it would have severed that.
When the lightning hit it, it would have melted the wire.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so first of all, the answer is no. What's acting more as a lightning rod is probably, how old is your building?
1928.
Probably your cast iron or galvanized vent stacks are acting more as a lightning rod than your antenna ever was. Just your antenna was higher. But, I mean, also, what's the propensity of getting lightning strikes in that area? Is it bad to have lightning rods? Of course it's not. It would be a great thing to have, one at each end of the high point of the roof. But remember, you have to run the cables, so you have to run lightning arrest or suppression cables the same way you run waistlines. They always have to go downward. Mm-hmm. Because if you put a loop going up, it'll jump off the bottom of the line and find the earth.
My waistline is not going down.
But the funny part... The funny part about... The interesting part about this question is that for many years before they had indoor plumbing, buildings were struck by lightning on a continuous basis, and there was a very big business of putting up lightning rods on all buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And now all of a sudden they put in indoor plumbing where you have the waistline coming through the roof as a vent stack, and all of a sudden it was not necessary to have lightning rods anymore. And so this is
But now we're going back, because now the vent stacks sticking out the roof are not made of cast iron or copper or steel anymore. They're now made of PVC,
which is a non-conductor.
So now we need them again.
Thank you so much for your call. We have some people who have called in with answers to the question, which is, in the language of architecture and design, what's the name given to the geometric design pattern found on the tile trim in many of New York City's subway stations, also buildings, fabric, jewelry, china, and a multitude of products that resembles a running molding trim of interlocking horizontal and vertical patterns.
This one just rolls right off the tongue, doesn't it?
Yeah, really. We won't talk about the grammar involved.
He has better command of the English language than I do.
Clayton, what do you think it is?
I really thought it was mosaic, but upon hearing your extensive...
I said mosaic.
Really?
Yeah, wouldn't be. But thank you for calling.
All right, thank you.
Julie from Manhattan. Hi.
Hi, Julie.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
What do you think it is?
Greek key.
You know what? I thought this one would take more than two calls. How did you know this?
I just pay attention.
Really?
I just pay attention?
No. That one I get. You know, you hear something along the line and you file it.
But the question is, what do you pay attention to?
Well, I would say everything if I'm sitting here listening to you guys.
Okay, good answer. But obviously the right thing at the right time to get her a book.
Yes.
So I'm going to put you on hold, and you will, because you've answered correctly, you will receive...
Save Money, Save Energy by Al Ubell and George Merlis.
Saving energy is a good thing to have some insight into.
And by the way, what do you do for a living?
Oh, lots of stuff.
Okay. Secrecy.
Go ahead.
Secrecy, yeah.
Pick the biggest income string.
Anything in the arts?
No, my husband's a composer, so it's close.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, does he compose in the Greek key?
I'm sure if he needed to, he could.
What kind of music does he compose?
Oh, operas, film scores, orchestra stuff.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's neat.
Okay.
And we thank you for calling us.
Okay, thanks, guys.
And we'll be taking more calls after we come back from a little break. Our number is 212-433-9692. The Gurus of How To, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell, are here. They visit us every second Wednesday of the month. We're back with the Gurus of How To, Al and Larry Ubell, and we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Leah from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on New York Public Radio.
Hi, Leah.
I'm grateful to have a chance to stop an argument between my husband and myself.
Oh, that would be great.
I found a whole bunch of little wings in my basement, tiny little wings. It was determined that it's termites.
Correct.
And... then about 2 weeks later, that was in my basement. Then 2 weeks later, I found it right above the same spot in my kitchen. And I had people in to take a look at it, and it's a very expensive thing, over $1,000.
Right.
So my husband says, what's the rush? These termites, it takes a whole long time. Let's wait and see. Maybe they just went through here. Maybe it's,
They were just visiting.
Maybe they're just visiting. They hang out, have a little nosh, a little rugula.
And then they'll go bother the neighbors.
And then they're off on their way. No, your husband's wrong. Okay? First of all, he's right in the respect that it's not like in the Popeye cartoon where the termites are eating up the ladder as you're climbing up. They don't quite work that fast. But if you have a swarm that happened in your apartment, in your house...
Yes.
If you had a swarm that happened in your house, you probably have a nest that's within 50 feet of your home. And the only way you have to have it treated, whether they put an envelope of poison around your house or they have some type of more biological way of actually neutralizing the nest, but it has to be done because they are probably, I don't know if whoever looked at the place found any damage in the building itself.
No. No damage. Just that they were determined that those were from termites.
Well, it'll be a matter of time that they will find your house and they will start deteriorating parts. And sometimes, he said, they did an inspection. Is your basement finished?
Yes.
See, he said you didn't have any, but he never really... Even myself, as an inspector doing this for 22-plus years, I don't always know if there are termites in a building because there are parts of the building that are concealed, and they can be eating those parts out without knowing it. So what you want to do...
But if there are wings, you will know that there are
termites. Well, you know that they're there.
If there are wings, that's the first thing that tells you that they've been there. They've been in the building almost 15 years already.
Wow.
That's the fact mm-hmm. in life. They work very slowly, and they eat away all of the sapwood of the lumber that's inside your building. My feeling is that this house that she is talking about, her own home, has to be treated ASAP.
Now, but Leah, how long do you plan to live in this house? Maybe you can sell it in about 20 years and have other people have to deal with the fact that termites are going to destroy the building.
Leah, $1,000 is not a lot.
Uh-huh.
Not compared.
But if you had to
replace one floor joist, that's $1,000.
But if there's a nest, does that mean it's outside the building?
Right. They're subterranean termites. They live below the ground.
Yeah.
Like an ant farm.
And also, and in the wintertime, the whole colony goes into the ground. However, if you have a good boiler in the basement or something like that, they sometimes make the nest right underneath the boiler, which is like summer for them all year round. That's a great place for them.
Where the boiler is, it's cemented.
But the termites can still be
underneath it.
Termites can get through a crack as little as a 16th of an inch.
Uh-huh. So
maybe even less, 32nd.
They're
very tiny. They're smaller than ants.
Yes.
Okay?
Good luck.
But they do damage.
Thank you so much for calling us.
And lots of luck.
And Maria from Manhattan. Hi,
Maria.
You're on the Leonard Lopate Show.
Hi.
Hi, good afternoon. I have a question for you about how to clean a floor properly. You know these sort of generic parquet floors that so many modern apartments have nowadays?
Yes.
I'm not talking like the high-end stuff.
No, you're talking about, actually you're talking basically floor, they're wood floor tiles.
Exactly.
I know, and it's a four-block pattern with, and they're about 6 inches or so long each plank, and they're about an inch or three-quarters of an inch wide. Right?
Exactly. And they
you put in Charles's room.
Well, the thing is,
remember you put the floor in Charles's room? That's what you're talking about.
Well, the thing is that what you can do is if you can get somebody in there with a steel wool instead of scraping it with sandpaper, but they have a steel walling buffing wheel that they go over the entire floor and clean it all up and make it nice and clean, and then put on a coating of polyurethane, at least two coats of polyurethane, you may get a long-lasting finish for that particular floor without doing too much damage.
Okay. Well, I think these ones, actually, I think they did put a coating on it when...
But that's what we're saying. What you're going to do is remove the old
a little
coat.
Bit of it so that you get a scuffing surface
right.
So that the new polyurethane could interlock with the existing coating, whatever that may be. We don't know whether that is polyurethane or a varnish or something like that, but when you steel wool the floor very vigorously, the new material or coating will interlock with the scratches that is made by the steel wool.
But you won't see the scratches?
No, it'll disappear.
But then after that, I mean, just for sort of...
Maintenance?
Just basically...
Does wet mop.
What do you feel about the butcher's wax stuff?
Don't put any wax on any floor. It's just a waste of time.
Thank you for calling us, Maria.
When you put a wax on a floor and then you want to do a refinishing job, the new finishing will not stick to it because it acts as a soft surface and the two materials break away from each other.
You have the Mary Hartman wax buildup problem.
Right,
yes, exactly.
But there's another interesting thing about the floor that she describes. They have installed a lot of those type of wood tile floors on concrete decks. And a lot of time, the mastic that they used or the adhesive they used did not stick very well to the concrete. And a lot of times you walk around, you have that kissing sound under your feet as you walk
mm-hmm.
because you hear it's sticking and then they're coming loose. That's a problem, and that takes a
real... There is no way of correcting that without removing the tile.
My guests are the gurus of how-to, Al and Larry Ubell, and we are taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Doug from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I live in a 1932 house for the last 3 years.
Me too.
Congratulations.
But mine's about 20 now.
And the former owner put in central air. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed that when we turn on the air conditioning or when the compressor kicks in, the lights dim. I know this isn't a good thing. I want to find out how dangerous is it.
First of all, where are you located?
New Jersey.
What town?
Montclair.
Go on.
Well, anyway, what's happening, something is, when the lights dim, that means that there is one of the circuits that the lights dim on, is out of balance with the rest of the building. That means what happened is one portion of the building has a lot of energy consumption, and while another portion of the system has a low energy consumption, because it's usually, if you have air conditioning, you have a three-wire, 110, 220-volt system. Well, if one side is out of balance and the compressor turns on, it draws a power away from that in order to balance it out, and all of a sudden the lights will dim. It's not a terrible thing, but it's quite annoying.
Yeah.
And if you have an electrician come in and rebalance the circuit, that will stop happening.
Let me also ask you a question. Do you know what kind of service you have coming into the building, how much amperage you have?
I'm afraid I don't.
That would be a good question to find out, because if you have anywhere around 100 amps or less, that really isn't, it probably isn't adequate for today's requirements, especially with a central air conditioning system on your system.
Because it probably is a minimum of if it's a central air conditioning unit, it's a minimum of 36,000 BTU.
Right, and what I'm thinking is if he's telling me the building's from the year that he is, and even if there was an upgrade of electricity, the upgrade probably happened somewhere in the 60s or the 70s, which is not the 90s, the 80s, 90s. I found that as doing inspections, as I went on in the 90s, that normally new homes have 150-amp service, 200, all new homes.
How would I make that determination? Do I need to get an electrician in?
Well, you go down to the main service, and there's one main disconnect, and you read the number on the circuit breaker, and that's the easiest way to tell.
If it's the right circuit breaker.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for calling us.
Okay.
Shannon from the East Village. Hi, you're on the air.
Ah, the East Village. Love that place.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
What's going on?
I recently installed two sets of track lighting in my apartment that have an exterior wire that plugs into an outlet that is connected to a switch that I installed a dimmer switch on. And whenever I lower that dimmer switch, the track lighting starts making this really loud humming sound.
Okay. Is what kind of lights are in? Is it incandescent or fluorescent bulbs?
They're halogens,
yes. You got to be very careful with the halogens on a dimming, because what happens is the amount of energy that's accumulating will make sometimes the wires almost rattle, or the casing and the wires will have an interaction to it that will cause like a sound like a bzzz, like that, right?
Exactly.
It's not a hum, but it's like a high-pitched sound. You have to get the appropriate dimmer switch for halogen lighting. It has to match. If it doesn't match, if it's made from just plain incandescent lighting, you may have a problem.
Because there are special dimmers. There are special dimmers for halogen. There are special dimmers for incandescent, and special dimmers for fluorescence.
The fluorescent has
the capability.
The capability, right.
Okay. Thank you for calling us. Marie from Queens.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I have, energy conservation questions and solutions for an apartment that has all the windows on one side. I learned from an engineer to open both the tops and bottoms, to improve.
Right.
And it works. Now, I have a question for you. I have two questions.
Hit me with one question. Hit me with one first, the better one.
The better one. Okay. If I have only 15 amps available for a living room and kitchen, can I run a 7,000 BTU air conditioner and a refrigerator if both compressors are...
That's a 7.5-amp unit. It depends upon how it was wired. That's a 7.5-amp, 110 volts only. It may or may not work. It's hard to tell with a telephone diagnosis or radio diagnosis, because I have to know what's in the circuit breaker panel box. But for all those people that are listening and want to save energy, I developed a energy audit, a free one for everybody else if they want to download it free of charge www.accuratebuilding.com. And right there on the upper left-hand corner of the home page, it says energy audit. Download that. I guarantee that if you follow that energy audit, you can save at least 15 to 20% or maybe more of your energy bill. You have to... be conscious about how energy is being utilized in your house with electrical light bulbs. Maybe you have to change them to fluorescent screw-in light bulbs. There are so many things happening out there that could really save your money and last many, many, many years.
Let me just say one thing, that she could probably run them both at the same time. The chances of them both cycling on at the same time is kind of remote. It could happen. It may blow the circuit. But really, the refrigerator is not supposed to be on the same circuit as anything else. Refrigerator is supposed to be on dedicated lines, which only them. But I've got to tell you, I do a lot of inspections where that is not the case. Okay, so be careful about food spoilage.
Paula from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have a 1910 Victorian home in Brooklyn.
Okay.
And I have no air conditioning.
Okay.
And really have resisted putting in window air conditioning. I don't like it. So I'm considering moving in a ductless air conditioning system. And they tell me, everyone tells me that this is really energy efficient and will work to cool my home.
Are you talking about the kind? Are you talking about the kind of units that are made by Hitachi or Mitsubishi, where
yeah.
you have a remote control and they hang it high up on the wall and so on? It comes with a little compressor that sits outside. Kind of looks like an oversized CPU for a desktop computer.
Correct.
Okay. Those work pretty well. They're pretty efficient. They're kind of glorified glorified wall units, because you know you basically have one unit that you have to look at. They are good, but they become very expensive when you have a building that has 8 or 9 rooms and you got to put 8 or 9 of them in. So it becomes very expensive, as opposed to a central unit that you're putting in one compressor and one air handler. But the expense is, you know, putting the ducts in. But these days also with the Unico system of high pressure 2-inch ducts, you could actually alleviate some of that cutting and ripping because the ducts are so much smaller. So there, you know, you really do have to. You can't just put in one kind of unit or just go to one person and you should price out. Totally.
Do you plan to live in this room? Is that it?
I mean, it's basically what she's doing is if you're only doing one room, it's
no,
okay, then it's fine.
Yeah,
but if you do the whole house, how many units are they talking about putting into this building?
Well, I've been told that I can put in one compressor with a Quadra system that would have 36,000 BTUs that I can spread out over 4 different areas.
And what did they give you a price on that one?
Well, one price I've gotten was $7,000.
That's not bad.
That's almost like the Home Zone that Carrier used to have. To distribute the air conditioning.
But that was done through ductwork dampening. Where she's actually putting in one of those units like in 4 different locations.
Yeah, but she's controlling the refrigerant in each place. So you have one compressor, but you have the 4 units going in different places.
I don't know
places.
If it's one compressor. It could be actually 4
How
compressors.
How many compressors did they say they're going to put in?
This particular place was one compressor.
But you don't know if it's... What I'm saying is I don't know if it's one compressor or it's a compressor that holds 4 little compressors.
That's true, too.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we're not going to resolve it here.
It's quite complicated.
But I'm thinking that it's not a bad system to put in if it's economically feasible. Efficiency-wise, they're very good.
Now, we don't have much time, so make this very fast, Randy.
Oh, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it. I'll try.
Go.
Okay. Maybe you're going to have to send it away. But then let me make this suggestion, because we really don't have enough time. Who does Randy write an email?
Email to me, and make sure you put your name Randy on it and your telephone number. Email to me, larry@ubell.com or larry@accuratebuilding.com, and I would be more than happy to get back to you on it.
And we will be seeing you again,
September.
The second Wednesday of September, whatever that is.
It is. And
do you know when it is? Does anybody here know?
Well, whatever it is.
It'll be a great day.
It'll be a great day.
Actually, it's the 13th. Would you believe 13th. That?
And at that time, we will again show all of New York, New Hampshire, Connecticut, and all of America how to go forth and fix, save energy, money,
and do it safely. What's with you in New Hampshire?
I don't like.
Do you think we reach New Hampshire?
I don't think they're listening to us.
Yes, they do.
It's New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, okay?
Thank you all so much. On tomorrow's underreported segment, we'll get an update on South Ossetia's push to break from Georgia with Russia's backing. Also, we'll talk to a woman who was raised by the last surviving black widow of a Civil War soldier And George Pelicanus describes his new literary murder mystery, plus Randall Wood's biography of LBJ. By the way, if you've missed something on the show or just want to hear something again, you can listen to archives of past programs at WNYC.org. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Melissa Egan with Sarah English, Brenna Farrell, and Blakeney Schick. We had help today from Brian Levinson, Sophie Rand, and Abe Reisman. Debbie Daughtry was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. We'll see you tomorrow.